research into practice conversation between pre-service and in-service teachers. In episode 10, I'm joined by two pre-service teachers, one in-service teacher and one university teacher educator, to discuss Dougan MacDonald's 2011 paper, Like a Fish in Water, Physical Education Policy and Practice in the Era of Neoliberal Globalisation, from Quest. As always, our discussions begin with a round-the-table discussion.
Good. So I was really intrigued by, you know, both the blog post and the paper on the fact that neoliberalism has pervaded in all of our lives in many different ways, including PE. And the goals of PE are really at stake when this neoliberalism comes into play, when PE is being outsourced, and the value of money in place of what the goals of PE should be, which is physical literacy, lifelong learning, and the journey to become a lifelong mover. And, you know, while a free market is a good thing in many ways, including in education, sometimes it can have a pervasive impact on our use of it in physical education, and it can impact teachers, teacher educators, and often students, as we all know. And FitnessGram and other companies that have come into the realm have really impacted how we view physical education in and of itself.
So I find this week's a little more demanding to sort of read and get my head around it. And then once I'd simplified the simplification in my mind, for me it came down to, this is just all about money, and it shouldn't be, because if you look at state schools here, you've just got teachers, they do all the extracurricular and everything like that. And then when you get to your private school, a bit more money, you get the coaches in as well and all that additional stuff. And then surely that would just come, if you then went even, if you went to a level of, oh, even more money, wouldn't you just get more teachers? Like, it's just a limit of money, really, at the end of the day, as with different things we've spoken about in the last few weeks, like Fitbits. And that, it's quite sad, really, that everything comes down to money and accessibility. And then something else I took away from this week's blog was the high stakes testing. Is that a result of neoliberalism, or is that a result of PE teachers trying to justify the value of their subject by putting numbers on it to members of staff, let's say higher up in the school, pecking order?
Yeah, to sort of respond to what Cam was saying, today in a lecture we were discussing the concerns as well around the fact that PE within schools is losing priority, to where, for example, in year 9, so 8th grade in America, you would actually, kids lose PE time to take part in the examined PE that happens in the year later. So here in 9th and 10th grade, they have examined PE, where they actually do lessons in its theory as well as the practical. And so it's disheartening, I guess, to have the demands of examined PE take away from core PE lessons, as well as Cam's putting, how you also are trying to, you know, attach value to PE in ways that it really shouldn't, and like fitness testing and just standardizing, because on top of what drives schooling isn't just the economy and money, but we were also talking about standardized tests and just how they're essentially valuable. You know, how if my school has really high average national standards, that in itself is an extra piece of value. So how can you then justify PE? Well, let's make it that standard in a marketplace where it's very economically and, economically judged. or in this case, standards of education. So it's slightly disheartening. And it's the reason why this discussion to me feels so important is because this is a career I'm jumping into and it's already in flames or it's already attacked. So it's really important to understand these concepts that fund the fundamental outcome, starting points of these debates and sort of work our way out of them.
Thanks, everybody. So I think I will start. I'm sure Ash is cringing. I will start with my proverbial. There's a lot to think about here. And first and foremost, as Ash points out on his blog, getting our hands around neoliberalism, and it's complex. But, you know, Ash does a wonderful job to articulate the idea of open and free market principles on education, the idea of choice and streamlining costs, efficiency. Those are the things I think about when I think about neoliberalism. We talked a little bit about it last week, and I avoided the topic because it is complicated. But trust, I think, is a matter in this equation as well. So when thinking about what to say for today, the one thing I continue to come back to is that when we start to look at a public service, or for that matter, a right, depending on the societies in question, when you start to look at education or other institutions, and we're seeing it, for example, in healthcare, in this part of the country or this part of the world, I'm sure, and probably other parts as well. But when you start to evaluate or put education under the cost-effective lens, the de facto goals for education will change as a result. And in the U.S., how is that translated in the U.S.? What's occurred in the U.S.? Well, since NCLB, No Child Left Behind, early 2000s and onwards, we have been in this accountability era in public education, resulting in high stakes testing and other initiatives like the Common Core. And it's had resounding effects, not only in all disciplines, but in physical education in particular. First and foremost, like my colleagues mentioned today, it forces school districts to now make decisions about the subjects that are tested versus the subjects that are not. And unfortunately, physical education has been in the past one of the subjects that are not tested or standardized. So certainly a lot to think about. And then moving forward, again, I can speak from my perspective because this has been an area that I've been interested in terms of my research as well. But in response to some of these external pressures precipitated by perhaps neoliberalist thought, disciplines like physical education have had to also succumb to high stakes testing. And in New York State, my home state as well, we have a value-added teacher evaluation process. So the idea of measuring the effectiveness of a teacher based on a pre- and post-test logic, the idea that teaching can be regulated to simply a treatment of the teacher itself. The child can grow based on the teacher itself, him or herself. The idea that there's nothing else in the equation that allows that child to grow. It suggests that learning is linear, and we know that there are many other factors that allow for the child to grow.
Yeah, I mean, some really interesting points then. I mean, I found this a very interesting paper. But yeah, unpacking neoliberalism, I think, was a challenge. I don't think Dean McDonald necessarily expected this to be read by teachers. It's a paper in Quest, which is an academic journal. It's run by the North American Kinesiology Society. So it's kind of, I can't remember exactly, but it's certainly a more of an academic journal. But as with lots of these papers, this was recommended. I asked people to recommend papers, and this was one of the ones that was recommended. So I thought I should give it a go and see what happens. I think some really interesting points. I mean, if I take the notion of high stakes testing, the big drive for that is coming with publishers. So, you know, people are, you know, big publishers are producing these tests. They're requiring people to do them. They're making the materials, they're making the curriculum, they're making the resources. They're running the tests, and it's big business. Education is big business, and when you open it up to a free market economy, then it becomes big business. But and then Cam, your point about, you know, it comes down to the money, and you know, when you don't have much money, then the teachers run the program. When you have more money, then coaches come in, and if you get even more money, then where does it go? And you'd like to think it went on teachers, but I think it probably goes on facilities. So you end up with the better schools having better facilities, which are then manned by specialist coaches, and the teachers kind of sit there. So we put it into that sort of way as well. And then we talked about David, you talked about P losing its position once kids get older. And you know, you see that in the US. Michael, you might be able to talk to this when, you know, it's the high stakes testing becomes things like FitnessGram, or when actually dressing out and doing band practice is the same as doing PE, and it becomes something that you do in limited spaces, and the importance of, you know, your STEM subjects, your maths, English, and, you know, engineering, technology, you know, everything else becomes more important. So you see that in multiple places. And the academicization of PE, which is what we're talking about here, was a move that started in the US. It was a criticism of the standards in the US because the US didn't win the race to space. Sputnik did, and the Russians did. And, you know, you start back and tracing it and working out why it all happened. Then, you know, we needed an academic side of PE, and what they found was kinesiology. They found biomechanics and physiology, and if you look at the PE A level and GCSE courses, they're ologies, sociology, and you know, well, biomechanics is not an ology, but you know what I mean. I finally got my hard copy of my book and David's book through the post today. And one of the opening statements we put here is our starting point, therefore, is to take a positive approach and point out that we cannot afford not to have quite high quality physical education in secondary schools, or whatever the cost. And David did a calculation that he reckoned that the cost of PE within schools with facilities and teachers in Scotland was £50 million. Well, that's nearly $70 million for a country the size of Scotland. So we're paying that amount of money out of the government purposes in Scotland. We need to be getting high quality physical education for that price. That's what people would expect. When you take that to a country the size of the US, you know, what states are paying and what everybody else is paying, then, you know, that's a phenomenal amount of money that's going into education. And yet costs are going up, etc. So, you know, one short-term gain for the school is to maximize the amount of money that they have, and it's cheaper to employ an unqualified teacher than it is to employ a qualified teacher. It's cheaper to keep teacher wages low. I read tweets about teachers who are working second jobs in order to be teachers, which seems a nonsensical thing to do, and this is the US more than the UK, but. So I think we need to be really, really, really clear that if we open up a free market economy, then it comes with choice. I mean, at the moment I'm watching a Netflix series called Snowpiercer. I don't know if you've caught it, but it's this this train that's 1,000 carriages long, and it's got the tail, which is the people who aren't even in a class. There's third class, second class, and first class, and they all experience different journeys in this post-apocalyptic world, and they get different privileges. And if education comes simply down to cost, then those in first class will always get the best experience. And free market economy may be a simple game, but I'm not sure it's necessarily a long-term educational game. But I'll open it back up to you guys.
Yeah, I certainly concur with a lot of what Ash has to say, and I'll try to pick it back up. It's a tough act to follow, but the standardized testing and high stakes testing that are in schools right now, I have firsthand experience providing those tests and seeing the student perceptions of those tests and how that interacts with their learning experience. And in my estimation and supporting what the paper had to say as well, fitness tests, do not promote healthy lifestyles or develop knowledge and skills for physical education. They can give you a framework for in that time and in that moment what that student's physical fitness abilities may be. But as Ash pointed out, they don't have long-term gains for motivation, or it doesn't provide students the transferability to become lifelong movers just based on a BMI reading, which is fraught with validity and reliability issues in and of itself. And high-stakes fitness testing really marginalizes and disenfranchises populations that might have poor socioeconomic status, populations that have limited resources and affordances in the home and in the family. And as they start to become movers, they are, seen as problems with this standardized testing movement and this high stakes testing movement. And the questions that I've had when doing the research and reading some of your work, Ash, and the papers that are out there, are PE teachers in this neoliberalism world going to be just simply brokers of data and, measuring market solutions to complex health issues? And I certainly did not become a PE teacher to broker that data. And in this data and technology world, I think we really have to reflect on that. And it almost dehumanizes physical education sometimes, because it doesn't provide that human element of high quality physical education for that student to grow over time. And students' growth and learning should be based on criteria and standards, not on the standards-based population means that are out there. So in the short term, it could be used in this neoliberalism society to paint a picture, as in Singapore, when they have such a hyper neoliberalist portion, where their schools in Singapore are ranked based on BMI measurements and high stakes testing. And I hope, other countries around the world don't get to that point, because I don't think it's a valid determination of the quality of physical educators and physical education in and of itself. And it narrows the curriculum for what physical education teachers are going to be tasked to do if they are solely evaluated on the data. And the telescope view that we need to have in physical education really needs to become more about getting students to become lifelong movers, appreciating physical activity for their benefit of health in one part, and not solely measuring their BMI or their physical data as a relative means to their overall health. It's only one measurement, and I don't think students should be judged on that, and moreover, physical educators and teachers should not be judged on their students' fitness measurements, because that is not the whole picture of what physical education and its purposes are.
Well, talk about a tough act to follow. That is fantastic, Michael. Really reflective perspective, and not much for me to add in, other than, you know, maybe a little bit of clarity for Ash and our other guests that, as I mentioned, in New York State and other states in the U.S., PE teachers now have been asked to, again, come up with a value-added proposition to measure their teacher effectiveness. And what Michael is referring to in many cases is that physical educators, or school districts for that matter, have asked physical educators to use fitness tests. So at the beginning of a unit, of a school year, students are tested in probably using FitnessGram. And as we know, and as Ash pointed out, there's a lot of articles about the neoliberal approach to FitnessGram now gaining traction. They fitness test the children, and then they fitness test at the end, and the growth or lack thereof that doesn't take place is attributed to that teacher. So PE teachers or school districts have asked PE programs to use fitness tests to show a PE teacher's effectiveness as a teacher. And that's problematic, as Michael has pointed out, for many reasons. And again, as I stressed at the beginning, it changes the goals. What do you think PE programs will look like under those auspices? I would hate to say, as Michael says, if it were to continue, that's where you're going to see PE go, if PE teachers are going to be evaluated on those metrics. Now, some of that has lost some traction or momentum over the last few years, which is good, but it's still there. And it's something that we certainly have to think about. And back to what Ash mentioned, cost, and looking at a service from a cost-effective lens poses challenges. The thing that strikes me as well is the history behind this line of thinking. This is not the first time we've gone down this road. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention one of my mentors, Dr. Mark Garrison, who certainly illuminated me regarding some of this history. But we have a history of going down this road of high-stakes testing previously. The payment by results era in our very own UK, Ash, with the Britain, Wales, and Ireland from 1862 to 1897. The same things took place. Focused on the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. The HMIs, the Her Majesty's inspectors, even questioned the evaluation process of teachers back then. Clever and low-performing children were ignored, and just a focus on the middle that could show the growth. And of course, the narrowing of the curriculum. The same things over 150 years ago going on right now to some degree. Teaching to the test as a result of these high-stakes measures. Burnout and turnover in the teaching profession, resulting in a teacher shortage. These are the things we certainly have to be wary of.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some really good, really, really good ideas and worrying things there. I mean, this notion of being a broker of data—that data, that's a scary proposition. Next, I'm actually gone in. I'm reading the paper for next week is Mikhail Kavenis et al's paper on the phantasmic logics of physical literacy, and some really interesting stuff in here that's relevant to this argument, because they're talking about different narratives, and they say beatific, as in beautiful and lovely narratives, and horrific narratives. You know, if we do, in this case, sport literacy, physical literacy, then these wonderful things will happen. If we don't do them, these horrible things will happen. But those same horrific narratives are being used for standardized testing. So, you know, we have a health crisis, we have a non-participation crisis, we have to do something differently. Let's measure and hold teachers accountable so we can solve this crisis and we can make everybody better. Well, physical illiteracy obviously isn't suggesting the same thing, but the narrative is there, that narrative that you would struggle to contest is there. You know, there's other narratives and sort of perspectives and logics, as they call them, but I won't bring that up now. But I think it's worth bearing in mind that we're in this position of horrific narratives, which are fueling different responses. And one of the responses is this global response. So high stakes testing is coming from, it's coming from the PISA data, the Finland is the best place to be educated and everyone needs to compare to Finland and why are they so good at, you know, all these things. And therefore you have this, you know, we have league tables in the UK where we show who the best schools are. And now we've got global league tables to show who the best countries are. And how that happens. But there's so much more than just the school system that drives results. We have things, you know, I get reports home from school and I get my kids MOGs. I don't know if you two, David and Cam, are aware of MOGs, but minimum outcome grades. These are the grades that they are expected to get as a minimum at GCSE or A level, or predicted grades. And schools will very rarely, if ever, give the highest grade as a predicted grade or a minimum outcome grade. Because if the student hits it, they just hit, there's no value added, they just hit what they're expected to hit. But if they don't hit it, then they show value lost as opposed to value added. And those are the scary things, is when we start thinking about, well, you know, what happens to teachers when kids don't get fitter on a Fitstagram, on a fitness gram thing, but when they get less fit, you know, what do they start doing to teachers at that point when kids, you know, and there's, you know, you can't account for glandular fever or a broken leg or any of these things. And you start end up with kids who are less active for whatever reason, or because the end of year exams are so important that they stop exercising so they can spend an extra half an hour doing their English test. Then what happens to PE when, you know, there's no measure of, you know, time spent? But I guess we could go around in circles. So I just want to challenge you to think about, what can we do? So what can you do as teachers to go against this? What can you do? It's a little bit of blue sky thinking in terms of, okay, well, we know this is happening. You know, what do you think you could do or AFP could do, which is the English Association for PE, or SHAPE America, or, you know, whatever. What could a national governing body do to try to change this? Or what could an individual school do or an individual teacher? So think of it on whichever scale you want, but how do we push back against neoliberalism in schools?
You know, I belong to a great organization in New York State, AFERD, and SHAPE America. And I think as a physical education teacher, the largest thing you can do to push back against this neoliberalist thoughts and the move towards high stakes testing and the outsourcing of physical education is advocacy. And advocacy is something that, you know, you can do as an individual. You can bring people in with you, and that creates a movement. And if you're able to create a movement and gain attention and gain traction, that gets people's attention, organizations' attention. And then you send that movement onwards and you voice your message and make sure it's heard at state, local, and federal levels. And then it gives them pause to maybe think about what quality physical education looks like and why these high stakes testing and outsourcing of PE might not be the best idea for long-term gain in physical education and long-term physical literacy, or even a bigger picture, is it really the best thing for global data on childhood obesity? Is this going to be the all cure for childhood obesity? Fitness testing, standardized testing, high stakes testing, outsourcing of physical activity programs within the school, extracurriculars. Has that done anything for global obesity or in child's? Or is it a much more complex issue? Are physical educators the sole proprietors of decreasing childhood obesity in our students? Or do we have to have a communal support from organizations that support our mission and will latch on and create policies at the local, state, and federal levels and in education to promote PE and start to promote healthy behaviors that are just not physical activity behaviors, but much more broad, that can start to address this long-range problem? Because at the end of the day, organizations and companies are fueled by the data that comes in, that this issue of childhood obesity and the statistics on this are not improving, and they seize upon the negative health data and use it as a model to create lucrative business. And so we need to push back against that, I believe.
Michael's right on. Ash and colleagues, advocacy is important. And I think we, you know, again, speaking from a domestic perspective, you know, Shape America has done a nice job with a position paper about not using, for example, fitness tests for the wrong purposes, or New York State AFRD, our state association that Michael alludes to, has done the same thing. We have to certainly advocate and alert and educate PE practitioners about the pitfalls when we're in this accountability era. I have some other recommendations, and Ash's point about blue sky thinking is certainly valid, but you know, I think I mentioned I've done a little research in this area, and I've been fortunate to get some results regarding it. And in 2014, I found out some interesting results about New York State's value-added endeavors in PE. 27% of our PE teachers in New York State were electing to use fitness tests. Another 37% were using written tests to demonstrate their value-added score. Here's another one. 18% of physical educators were using an ELA or math score. ELA or mathematics. So a subject that they do not directly teach. They may support, we're not arguing that, interdisciplinary approaches in physical education and hopefully in all disciplines are important. But 18% of physical educators were using ELA and mathematics standardized test scores to determine their value as a teacher. And then last, and coming up at the end in fourth place, almost 17% of PE teachers reported using performance-based assessments geared towards physical education. So under these conditions, the test that we would probably default to the most is used the least. When asked if they didn't have, when PE teachers were asked when they didn't have this policy to think about, 95% of PE teachers would suggested that they would use a performance-based assessment to measure outputs, outcomes in physical education, compared to 1% written test, 4% fitness test. I think the answer is there for us. I think we need to encourage PE practitioners to not cater to the policy to use performance-based assessments that best show growth in their discipline, not worrying about the policy. And then again, blue sky thinking, as Ash mentions, When these policies are developed, PE practitioners need to be at the table when these policies are developed. Back to Michael's point about advocacy. So many times these policies are envisioned for traditional core subjects, and subjects like physical education, music, and art are an afterthought. And then as a result, the policy then has to be postured and positioned or modified to fit the physical educator. Perhaps the policy should be envisioned for all disciplinary professionals, not just the traditional subjects.
Okay, but if I'm a teacher in an individual school, and my district says to me, or my school says to me, you need to provide data that shows that you've added value, and I choose physical activity data, I choose performance data, the data, and my school says, well, that's your own personal view on this, I need some hard statistics. If I turn around and say no, and I'm replaceable because they can bring in a coach, then I need support from somebody to say, it's okay to say no, and we can support you to do that, because otherwise you're talking about livelihoods, you're talking about family supported and all those sorts of things. So, you know, this is where Shape America comes in. This is where AFB comes in. This is where, you know, unions come in to say, well, you know, we don't think this is good, and we're going to get all our members to say, no, we're not going to do this. And that's where you can make real change, because these organizations are political. They are educational, but they're political bodies. So, you know, to me, the blue sky's thinking is, how do we encourage our national governing bodies and unions or whatever to support what is good practice? We need to, as researchers, we need to provide evidence of what is good practice. And we need to advocate for our field, but we can't be lone voices. So it's feeling supported within the department, within the school department, within the district or the county, within the organization. So pushing back against these things is a very difficult thing to do individually, and we need to do them collectively. So the blue side's thinking is, how do we use this together? And it requires effort. It requires effort on individuals and efforts on people. People have to stand up and be advocates. One of the difficulties is that national governing bodies and unions are, as I said, are political themselves. They are wheeling and dealing themselves in terms of how they survive and how they feature on the agendas of government departments and government policies. So they're not standalone organizations who have the autonomy to do what they want, because they have to be recognized as well. And this is where it starts to become, you know, quite difficult. I mean, I think we can make individual decisions not to do this, or to minimize to the maximum extent to which we do use them. But we do need to acknowledge that we need to work together to make this happen. So, you know, I think it's a more complicated piece. I agree with what you said, Clancy, but there's a lot of to be done by lots of people collectively, and that unity takes time and effort.
I could not agree more, Ash. You're exactly right, and it is a collective initiative for us to consider moving forward that way. It's not easy for a PE practitioner in the trenches to push back. And so we do need, and that's what I meant by supporting Michael's advocacy, we do need to be at the table as a collective whole. And I think the one thing that you really point to nicely in the blog that I think cannot be lost, and you mentioned it again today, the neoliberal agenda as it relates to education, part of it is what you said. It's, unfortunately, is it about cost effectiveness and deprofessionalizing teaching? And that's a part of this that we cannot forget. If we can isolate what it is that a teacher does, then we can offer it cheaper with an unlicensed professional, perhaps, or some sort of individualized learning. That's a big term nowadays that we have to be weary of, and we have to be careful of it. But again, it regulates teaching to being just a pre and a post. And we know that there's so much more to providing the conditions for the child or the plant to grow.
I guess just one final idea that this has already brought to me is that in schools at the moment, I think there's always been a pushback from like standardized testing. And as a PE department, we are sort of the last ones, you know, we're the last ones standing, and we almost need to rebel. I mean, really quite, like, I'm sure you can think of some fun metaphor behind it all, but we need to try maintain a ground in that fight for what PE truly is, as opposed to what policy would like it to be.
Yeah, I think in conclusion here, professionalizing PE teachers should be taken as a threat in this neoliberalism agenda. And, you know, the overemphasis on, you know, individuals, children's data, body weight, fitness can often become a negative experience for many students. And we don't want to become, like I mentioned previously, brokers of data. We want to make sure that we're in the trenches helping these students to learn and, you know, demystifying the stigmas of what traditional physical education is viewed from the outside looking in. And, you know, these organizations that define what physical education is for us don't have the power to regulate what quality teaching is.
And that's where our discussions ended. I'd like to thank Cameron, David and Michael for their insights as teachers, and Clancy for lending his thoughts to our discussion. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and hopefully you'll choose to catch up with us next time when we talk about physical literacy.